This is a test. This is Talk of Alaska. Hello, friends. I'm Steve Heimel, and here we are statewide. I can't hear myself to know if this is actually happening or not, but we'll take it for granted that it is and begin the show. And what we're going to talk about today is job growth in rural Alaska. With me is Danny Constantine. Hello, Danny. How you doing?
Hey, pretty good. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, nice we got here. Danny there? All right, good. Well, I guess we're... Maybe I'll just take my earphones off and simplify things so we could just have a little conversation here, because we won't be able to hear the phone calls until we get things hooked up. But it's great to have you here.
Oh, nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Steve.
So you're running an agriculture department program. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. I'm the state executive director for one of USDA's many, many agencies. Department of Agriculture is a huge agency. It's actually the second largest agency in the federal government after the Department of Defense. So USDA does everything from foreign food to school lunches, nutrition programs, a lot of work in rural America. And the agency that I work for, the Farm Service Agency, pretty much is in the business of helping family farmers across the country, primarily with loans, financing to help farmers buy equipment, buy land, just run a family farm. We also run a number of kind of safety net programs that help farmers in the case of disasters, weather. Farming is inherently a pretty risky business, and in order to help farmers and farm families survive in this country, there's been programs that have been set up over the years. The agency that I work for started back in the 30s in the during the Depression, when there was a real need for some programs to make sure the farmers were surviving, and that we were providing food to Americans. And so it's continued since then, and we run a number of programs. Every 5 years, the Congress goes through and writes another farm bill, and we operate a lot of programs that have come out of that farm bill. There's an interesting program, actually, was in last year's farm bill that was targeted specifically for farmers in places like Alaska. Alaska and Hawaii and some of the territories.
Well, I'm so glad you're finally getting to Alaska here, Danny, because this is what is so weird, is here we are talking about job growth, and here you are in charge of farm stuff, and yet there's a connection, because apparently your agriculture secretary, Mr. Vilsack, instructed the department, all the different regions of the Department of Agriculture, to go out there and find out what the ideas of Americans were to stimulate job growth in the rural parts in rural America. But when you talk rural Alaska, you're not really talking farms that much, are you?
We don't have a lot of farms. That's true. But I think there's a lot of opportunity, though. I think Alaska has a great opportunity to expand the amount of food that is produced here.
Right. I think so. And I want to get back to that, because our listeners absolutely love to talk about that. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. It's Talk of Alaska. And my guest is Danny Constantine. He is with the U.S. Department of Agriculture Farm Services Agency, based in Palmer, Alaska. And Danny, I remember you working for the Interior Secretary under the Clinton administration, right?
That's right. I've been in Alaska a long time. I first came to Alaska in 1969, and I've lived all over Fairbanks, Juneau, and Anchorage, and traveled all around the state. But there was a period when I was back in Washington, D.C., during the 90s, working for the Interior Department, working on a lot of Alaska issues from the D.C. side.
So this means you are no stranger to bureaucracy. So now I want to take you back to where I interrupted you when you were talking about one of the programs that kind of touches on Alaska for farmers. In other words, that they branched out to more than just your conventional, I guess, what would you say, tractors and fertilizer type of farming.
Yeah. Well, Alaska is different. Alaska is unique, and we have unique challenges up here to try to make Alaska agriculture succeed. I think, as you say, you know, our listeners are attuned to this, and I hear this all the time. People are really interested in Alaska grown. I mean, my 11-year-old boy went to school today with his T-shirt on that says Alaska grown, right? I mean,
yeah.
We see that everywhere. People understand that, and they're interested in Alaska grown products, but they're not so sure where they can find them, and they want more of them. So the challenge here is, how can we produce more Alaska grown food? And you know, we've got challenges. You know, we've got distance, we've got weather, we've got soil problems, we've got high costs of doing business. So one of these programs that was in the 2008 Farm Bill is designed to help address the cost problem, the transportation cost problem, and it's going to help farmers to compensate for some of those additional costs that, for feed or fertilizer, or even transporting their products outside. There's a federal program now that's going to help some of these farmers with their high costs.
I'm thinking some ears are perking up among the producer sector out there. But let's try and broaden it out for now to this whole statewide jobs thing. Did you attend all of four or five of these meetings, right?
Yeah.
And I remember there was one in Kotzebue.
The Kotzebue meeting was pretty exciting because, we asked the questions, and we asked these same questions at all four of these meetings, just to the public or whoever wanted to come and talk about their ideas about how we can create jobs. We asked, what are the barriers? What are the problems with creating jobs in places like Kotzebue? Because, I mean, we all need jobs. You think about why you live in a place. Why do we all live in Alaska? Well, we live here because we like the quality of life, and we like the community, and we like the things we can do up here. But we also need jobs. We wouldn't be here if we didn't have jobs. And I think the same is true in the rural areas and the villages.
Right, but doesn't it seem pretty well cut and dry? You got your utility, you got your government, you got your school district, and you got whatever they do in that town, like fishing or whatnot, and then like a little bit of retail. Let's see, have I left anything out?
Right. So then the question is: so what can government do? I mean, the assumption is most of the job growth is going to be through the private sector.
You'd think.
That's where the driver is for job creation, and I think that's what we believe. But there is a role for government, and what can government do to help kind of build a foundation for private sector job growth? And the things that came up in Kotzebue were things like infrastructure. Say, well, government can help us with roads.
I'm sure that came up, because you've got at the same time that you guys were doing this, we have an ongoing process of the rural sub-cabinet of the Parnell administration is sending out Attorney General Sullivan, and that's basically the message that comes out of him over and over again is, roads.
Well, what they talked about in the Kotzebue area was not so much a road to Kotzebue, but a road from Kotzebue to link some of the villages up there. At this Kotzebue meeting, we had a live call-in show on KOTZ, and a caller from Selawik said, I'll tell you one thing we can do. We could get a road out here to Selawik. But roads were talked about. They talked about a port. They could have a deep water port. So there were transportation related infrastructure, things that they said government could do. The other thing they talked about was broadband. Said that's an infrastructure that if we had that up here in Kotzebue, they said, look, our population here is already pretty tech savvy. They've got the one-to-one laptop program where every high school student has a laptop in their villages up there. These kids know how to use the internet, but they don't really have good access to it. So if they had better broadband, they could do more training, they could do more telemedicine, there could be more opportunity for small business creation because you could get businesses who are connected to the global economy. So that was one of the things they talked about was infrastructure that the government could do. The other thing they talked about was one of the impediments to job growth up there was just the high cost of living.
I'll bet.
Yeah, they said, hey, did you read the latest McDowell study that said Kotzebue is the most expensive place to live in Alaska? I said, well, why is that? Why is it so expensive? Well, two main areas, energy and food. And so the things they started talking about as job creation ideas or sort of a win-win. They said if we could get jobs that would help reduce our energy costs or jobs that would help reduce our food costs, that would get us on the road towards reducing all of our costs. And if we had lower costs, maybe we could do some more business up here.
You know, this is starting to get fascinating because I went to the one that you held in Anchorage. And we learned from Chris Rose, who we had on the show a few times in the Renewable Energy Alaska project, that there are already probably at least a couple thousand jobs in Alaska that are dealing with our energy conversion, and probably more than that. That's just what, you know, he knew for sure. So we're actually, in other words, this is the usual Obama administration line about, creating jobs by building the infrastructure of a sustainable society, something like that. And, but I mean, in Alaska, it appears that we're already getting this happening. In other words, we have a number of functioning wind farms up now. Mm-hmm. So then it becomes kind of matters of, training. And if the energy cost is down and the broadband comes in, what are we going to do with it? And, you know, we got people that are thinking about this. I mean, I think that's what you found at your meetings. If people are thinking, yeah, well, if I had broadband, I could.
Right.
Thus and such.
Right.
And the broadband's coming. I mean, we're very likely to get that Arctic cable, and that's going to touch in different places than people are usually accustomed to, going right through the Bering Sea and on the Arctic Ocean. So suddenly Barrow and possibly Kotzebue could have connectivity there. We also have USDA has funded at least two projects now that are starting to, one's a middle mile and the other's a last mile, that are actually going to get, at least one of them, going to get broadband internet connection to people's homes.
Right.
So it's starting to happen.
Right. No, and I think, again, part of the challenge in living in Alaska is, and especially in rural communities, is you need to be able to participate both in the subsistence economy and in the cash economy. It's got to be a kind of a combination.
Oh, you bet.
Of both of those.
It's a whole lot of people listening right now that they're saying, oh, somebody finally said it.
Well, yeah. And so if you're going to get people to be able to stay in villages, I think broadband is a key to that. Because once they're plugged in, and then they'll be able to, create jobs, do their work, by being connected to the internet. And it could be opportunities for other kinds of job creation. One idea that came up when we were at the Juno Job Forum was they said, Alaska would be a perfect place to build these server farms because, first, they need two things. Actually, they need three things, I think. They need electricity. Maybe low-cost power would be good. They need cold weather. Well, we have that. And they need good connection to the internet.
Man.
And so Alaska would be a perfect place where we could locate these, you know, giant server farms.
This is so crazy. I'm thinking all the way back to the Cooper administration when the former Governor Steve Cooper had this idea that we could be a center for international banking here, if you look at the geography. Mm-hmm. And now, all of a sudden, server farms, it just has a certain blast from the past feeling to it, you know? Yeah. I mean, I remember all the justifications that Ted Stevens gave for having a supercomputer up here. And, well, it's done nothing but grow, and it's used by people all over the world now. And right. They keep putting more and more processing capacity in there. It's sort of already kind of happening. But it's so eerie to think of distance not being the important thing. And then when you go back to the other aspect that you started on, you know, we have the cost of transporting things, the cost of fuel, all right? Transporting things gets less when you can do things virtually. Fuel gets less when you move to renewables, and then you get the high cost of food.
Right.
And I don't know where we're going with that, right. But I do know that for the last 2 years, anytime we've brought up the subject of local food on Talk of Alaska, it's just totally blasted out the phones. It's maxed out the phones. People want to talk about this. And I was amazed to find out all our community-based agriculture last year was all, by the time we did a show on it, was just coming along springtime. I said, let's do a gardening show. And it was already too late to subscribe into all this community-based agriculture mm-hmm. because they were all booked up. All their capacity was used.
You know, an interesting connection that we heard in these jobs forums was between the renewable energy and food. And the number of people were saying, well, gee, couldn't we kind of, if we're going to build a new, whether it's a wind or a biomass power generator, wouldn't it be a good thing to build a greenhouse right next to the generator and take any of that waste heat and start growing some food? So there's a number of ideas where people were saying, let's do both. Mm. Let's reduce our energy costs by using some renewables, converting to renewables, and at the same time, start using some of that waste heat to grow some food right here in our villages.
And one we haven't even talked about is the low-temperature heat pumps that are being explored all over Alaska now. Mm-hmm. You know, thanks to Bernie Carl, evidently there's just all sorts of applications. You can get a geothermal with not that much of a temperature differential, yeah. Maybe even ocean water at some point.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I heard a lot about was weatherization was another kind of win-win job creator.
Yeah, it's probably a very, very good investment, certainly over the short term, from everything we can understand.
Yeah, I heard everything from the university in Fairbanks saying that all of the weatherization that they did on their buildings, they did a analysis and they said 87% of the contract work that they let to do that work was all local. So these jobs tend to be local jobs. You don't get the big contractors from the lower 48 coming up to do weatherization. So the weatherization work tends to put Alaskans to work. And then it also has this longer term effect of reducing our energy costs, which is always, again, good for job creation.
Yeah. Well, we saw that when in the first year of the Palin administration, the legislature basically decided to pay for a bunch of weatherization.
Yeah.
And boy, were there ever problems with that. And the reason was very simple, because the people that run government at AHFC, I think it was, had to figure out how to make it real. In other words, that you had to have a testing process before the work began, and then you had a testing process at the end in order for people to get their rebates. And it turned out we hardly had anybody qualified to do the testing or the equipment. So it took a while to do that. Now we have a bunch of these people. And even now in rural Alaska, I understand in some areas it's very hard to get to get somebody.
Yeah, no, I think they're still having some problems in Kotzebue. people said they really liked the program, but they had problems participating in it, in part because, as you said, there weren't trainers, there weren't weatherization assessors up there. But also, in order to do the repairs, they need money. Even though they would be reimbursed for those repairs, a lot of people in those communities didn't have the money to get them started in the first place. So they were having problems with that. One idea that we heard at a couple of the jobs forums about weatherization was people said, why don't we, you know, back in the 30s, they had the CCC and they had they put people to work doing projects around the country, helping the national parks and building bridges. And they said, well, why don't we have like a conservation, weatherization kind of a core where we could put, you know, young people to work, send them around the state, and they can do some of these repairs. That'd put them to work, and we'd get some weatherization done. I thought that was a pretty interesting idea.
AmeriCorps.
Yeah.
It's back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our guest is Danny Constantine. He's with the USDA. He's from the government. He's here to help you. He's interested in hearing your jobs, for your ideas for rural job growth in Alaska. Is your report already written for the secretary?
You know, we're just kind of wrapping it up now, but I am interested in hearing more ideas. Let me give you an email address if you want to send any of your comments and have them included in the report. We're using just the name of one of our employees who's been working on these jobs forms, Gene Kane. So the email, just send it directly to Gene. It's at gene.kane at ak.usda.gov. Anyone who, I like this, continuing this conversation with Alaskans about how can we create jobs, particularly in rural areas of
the
state.
And I'm all for bringing it back as a subject on the show as well. This is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about rural job growth. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. And our email is talk@aprn.org. So far, we've got one email, and it comes from one of our stations. Says, yeah, you're coming through okay. Everybody could hear but me. Let's go to, looks like Tandy. Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska, Tandy. Hello. Hello, are you there? I think maybe getting freaked out by...
Can you hear me?
Oh, absolutely.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. There's you got to turn your radio
Hello?
Down. Yes. Can you hear me? Oh, well. That was a nice try. Welcome to the Rural Alaska Telephone System.
Yeah.
Still got some work. Needs work. We get this all the time on Talk of Alaska. It's just part of Alaska and part of being in Alaska. And looking for cash pan work, and what are going to be the possible sources of job growth? What can the government do to reduce or eliminate barriers that already exist? You know, sometimes it's financing.
Yeah, and particularly when it comes to agriculture, you know, banks, and particularly now in this country where credit is tight, the government can play a role in trying to inject some funds into the money supply. And our agency, Farm Service Agency, has played this role for a long time for farmers who have always had difficulty getting loans. Farming is a risky business, and banks don't always want to make loans to farmers. And so this is a role that the government has played for a long time to try to provide financing for farmers.
So was the response pretty good to these meetings? I mean, it really, you didn't have much time.
Yeah, it was good. You know, we had, you know, 50 to 100 people, sometimes more at most of our meetings. you know, at the Kotzebue.
That's real good.
Meeting. Yeah, it was broadcast across KOTZ, so I think we probably had, even more listeners across the 10 villages that KOTZ reaches in the Northwest Arctic. I think there was a lot of interest in this subject. How can we create jobs? What's the best way? You know, another interesting thing that came out of Kotzebue was some people at the Kotzebue meeting said, creating jobs is not the problem. We actually have a number of jobs. As you said earlier, Steve, you've got the school district. We have jobs for teachers. The problem is we have to import teachers because we don't have local residents who have the training to be teachers. Said we've got jobs at the Red Dog Mine. We just don't have high-skilled workers to take those high-skilled jobs. We have healthcare jobs. Manilik, has jobs up there. We just don't have nurses, local nurses, to fill those jobs. So what we need in Kotzebue is more training support so we can train our local residents in the Northwest Arctic to take these jobs.
Yeah, that's another chronic issue we've taken up on Talk of Alaska over and over again with a lot of interesting responses. How do we prepare the workforce of the future? And there's all sorts of programs that already exist, but that doesn't necessarily get the workers to the jobs. And that seems to be where we're at.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that we heard a lot in rural Alaska is that there needs to be an awareness of the lifestyle, the cultural lifestyle in rural Alaska. We need to accommodate our jobs so that they fit. People in rural Alaska do need to continue their subsistence activities. When it's time to go hunting, they need to go hunting. And we need to create jobs that fit that kind of lifestyle. We can't just expect that we'll be able to, put an 8-to-5 job and make it really work in some of our rural communities.
I'm glad that came up at the meeting. That's certainly a chronic one. Well, Stephen chimes in with so far farming questions coming up for Danny Constantine of the Farm Services Agency of the USDA. What a surprise, huh? this one from Steve. Do you think you can grow quinoa in Alaska? This is a high altitude, high value, high protein grain from the Andes. Maybe it would work here. Got any idea?
Yeah. I don't have any idea, but I know that our farmers are pretty innovative and pretty creative up here. Part of the problem in Alaska agriculture is kind of fitting it into the whole food system. A farmer is not going to grow something unless they believe that they'll be able to sell it.
Well, yeah, I mean, we even have a slaughterhouse problem, for Pete's sake.
Right.
So let's not even start about dairies.
Well, there's... Well, that's right. So there's all these pieces of the food system. There's not only the farmers who grow it, but we've got to get it transported.
Yeah, so you have a grain, you got to mill it.
You've got to mill it. You've got to get it to the market. I think there's a lot of opportunities for processing, value-added processing that we could have up here, distribution, and getting it to places that want it, or that need it. Particularly in rural Alaska, how are we going to get our local food to that area? But I don't think there's any doubt that if we had more Alaska production, if we had more Alaska-grown products and people in Alaska were buying those Alaska-grown products, that would help our economy. I mean, it's just the whole concept of food dollars. I mean, so many of our dollars are leaving the state. We're only purchasing less than, I've seen different figures, but somewhere around 3% of the food that we buy is Alaska-grown food. So that means that 97% of our food dollars are being exported to the lower 48.
If Danny, we kept more of those dollars. I see you're really getting worked up about this. It's Talk of Alaska. Danny Constantine is our guest. And the question that's out there right now is whether or not it's possible to grow quinoa in Alaska. I'm sure there's someone listening right now at 1-800-478-8255 that knows the answer to that question. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Calls are thundering in here to Talk of Alaska as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from the 2010 BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Nomination forms for teachers are available in local newspapers and at bpteachers.com. And by TeleAlaska, a telecommunications company proud to support public broadcasting, sharing the spirit of communications across the Great Land. Voice data and Wi-Fi technologies at TeleAlaska. On the web at telealaska.com.
Jobs in rural Alaska is the subject on Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel, and boy, all it took was 60 seconds already. We find out it's probably pronounced quinoa, right?
Quinoa.
Quinoa. Did we lose our caller there? Ah, okay. Let's try this other one then. Pamela in Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
The topic is jobs, and you also have USDA there.
Yes.
And I would also encourage looking at the program USDA has that hasn't been real well supported in Alaska, which is based upon community sustainability using natural resources. And a lot of what we think of as jobs and food and other kinds of items are things that people do all the time, whether they get paid for it or not. And the Resource Conservation and Development Councils are just an untapped resource that's never really been supported to help communities do that kind of, how do you increase production of food on the land? How do you share resources? What is the value of a community? If you have to move the community, we have 200 that need moving because of erosion. How do you do that?
So are you talking about Soil Conservation Service? I'm lost in the maze here.
Well, the USDA is a maze, as I said earlier.
Yeah.
It's a huge agency, and the Resource Conservation and Development Councils are another piece of...
Used to be the old Soils Conservation Service, now the Natural Resource Conservation Service.
Yeah, and these... These folks do a great job down on the ground. I've visited offices on the Kenai and in Copper Center, and they do work with their communities and provide technical assistance and work on projects within their communities.
Thanks, Pam.
Our agency, the Farm Service Agency, tries to work closely with our sister agencies within USDA and really try to work together to achieve our goals of trying to support agriculture and support communities here in Alaska.
Right. Well, you know, if you got too much erosion, you start messing with your spawning beds and so forth and on like that. You know, like I personally live on Fish Creek. Now, I think there's a reason why it's named Fish Creek.
Yeah.
But there's no fish in it now. I'll tell you that, but I'm actually a cooperator in this with this soil conservation deal, to where there is sometimes even money involved in trying to make something out of that watershed.
Yeah, well, and that is one of the goals of USDA and our agencies, is not only to support healthy farmers and farm communities and rural communities by providing jobs, but conservation is a part of that. I think you want to do that that's one of the ways that you make these communities and these jobs sustainable, is to make sure that there's going to continue to be, whether it's fish or soil or wildlife, for the next generation, so that your kids will still be able to fish or farm or harvest trees. I think the conservation side of this is an important side of what our goals are.
Danny, is there anything that you can do from your office in Palmer to assist this apparently booming community-based agriculture idea, community-supported agriculture? It would appear that farmers that have done it are staying afloat, which is saying something, and that there's still a lot of demand, that there's quite a few people. I mean, people are going so far as to subscribe to services that ship food up from Seattle.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah, I mean, there's a, as I was saying earlier, this sort of concept of a food system, the way I see it is there's both the supply and the demand side, right? So, and I think both sides of the equation need some help. The demand side, although it may seem to you that there's plenty of demand, you know, there was a story earlier this winter about potatoes and how we've got plenty of Alaska potatoes in the stores and in the root cellars, but people aren't buying them. They're buying the Idaho potatoes. And I think there's still a need for additional consumer education and consumer awareness about buying Alaskan. We do it when it comes to salmon. Right? I mean, do you know, I don't know many Alaskans who will buy farmed salmon.
Trying to think of one.
But we will buy Idaho potatoes. And I think it's that same mindset. Why do we buy wild Alaska salmon? There's a number of reasons. We buy it because we think it supports our fishing industry, which might be our neighbors, and helps our fishing communities and our fishing economy. We also buy it because we know where it comes from and we think it's a healthy food, and we may be willing to pay a higher price for a product that we know is Alaskan and we know it's good. But I think we still got a ways to go on the consumer side when it comes to purchasing Alaska vegetables, or milk. I mean, there's a great creamery now in the valley. The Matanuska Creamery is producing fresh Alaska milk. You can get it in most of the stores in the yellow jugs, but it's more expensive. It's more expensive than the milk that's flown up from the lower 48.
They don't have the money for any kind of promotion or anything to.
Yeah. So if you're a consumer, you go into the store and you say, well, this
yellow bottle of milk costs more than the white bottle.
That's right.
Right. Gotcha.
So I think there's work that needs to be done on the consumer education side to increase our awareness. But I think on the supply side, there needs to be more farms. We need to produce more food. We need young farmers who are willing to take a risk and get out there and start farming food, or you know, there's a market for cut flowers. You know, peonies is a big new industry, or there's a new industry for even farming from the sea. I mean, farming mariculture, farming oysters. In Southeast, there's a great opportunity down there. But we need people who are willing to, kind of be entrepreneurial and get out there and really try it.
Well, that's a good lead-in for our caller, Dave from Cordova. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Dave. You're on Talk of Alaska with Danny Constantine. Hi there, Dave. Hello, Dave. So you were off listening to the radio, I reckon, huh? I think something's gone wrong with the patch, evidently, where our callers are not hearing us back, as near as I can tell. Dave, are you there? All right, it's enough of that, Dave. let's Let's go ahead and hammer our head against this wall yet one more time and go to David in Golcona. Are you with us, David?
Hello.
Hi, David.
Hello.
How are you, David? Can you hear me? Ah, I see. That is the problem.
Hi.
He can't hear us.
How are you, David? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
We can go on like this forever. Thank you very much, David. What I want you to do now is just go ahead and say what you called up to say, and then we'll say goodbye. We have too much of a delay going on here. So we'll sit and wait for you to do that now.
Go ahead and say what you call up to say, and then we'll say goodbye.
Good, isn't it?
Yeah. We'll sit and wait for you to do that now.
Never did this before on the radio. David didn't think that was too confusing for him, I guess. It's a little confusing for me, too. Well, as you may have gathered, we're having a little bit of a technical problem here. And I think probably our connections aren't quite kicked into the configuration that we thought they were supposed to be when we launched the program. So we're just stuck with it this way. Yes, go ahead,
Danny. What I was saying about kind of the food systems and the supply and the demand side. So we got to work on the demand side, and then we got to work on the supply side. But then we also have to work on everything that's in between. And I think there's a role for government, for state government. I think there are things that policymakers can do to encourage more local food, more purchasing of local food. One of the things I'm involved with now is the formation of a new group called a Food Policy Council, where we're going to try to bring together all of the stakeholders, all of the players in state government who are involved in any way in food, and start to talk about these problems. What are the barriers? And hopefully at the end of the day, we'll come up with some recommendations.
Do you have a date yet for this? Or?
Our first meeting of the Food Policy Council is going to be in May.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to bring together a number of these stakeholders from around the state, from rural villages, from the health department. We've got interest in reducing obesity. If we can get healthier food in the mouths of Alaskans, that's going to deal with a lot of the health problems that Alaskans are experiencing. Agriculture departments, purchasing departments, schools, what kind of food do school districts purchase? Is there a way we can help get more local food into the school district? So we're going to bring together all these players and see if we can come up with some ideas and then maybe bring those back to the legislature. There might be some actual legislation that will come out of this where we can help improve the amount of local food that Alaskans are eating.
Okay, Danny, here's where I start with the tweeting around. Evidently, the phone patch has gone weird, but the email's working fine. So if you're ready, I'm going to just try and relay these email messages here as best I can. Dave O says, I got cut off on the cell phone. He was the one that just called a little while ago, as evidently the weather. And he said, berries, antioxidant, in demand, land grabs going on. Let's cultivate the darn things. What a thought.
Yeah. I think there are opportunities for berries as a crop in Alaska. When we were in Juneau on one of these jobs forums, the regional corporation down there, the Sea Alaska Corporation, talked about an idea that they wanted to do on some of their lands in Southeast to carve them up into some berry patches and allow individual shareholders to do berry businesses where they would harvest berries, and there's market out there for them. And you know how blueberries grow in Southeast Alaska.
Well, so. I recall in the Kenai Peninsula there was an effort to, for a while, may still be going on, but they wanted to get some kind of lease for berry harvesting on I think it was federal lands, might have been state, and actually felt that they could make a medical product out of these berries that they're there were concerns by locals of their own berry picking, and also that it might not be completely friendly towards the berry growing environment. So I'm not sure what became of that. Here is one from Lynn Canal. Can we get broadband up Lynn Canal? Don't know. Kelly and Haynes, they say our broadband is not so great right now up there. Yeah, I sympathize with you.
I do too. And as Steve said earlier, USDA has recently awarded a number of at least two bids to Alaska firms to install both middle mile and end of mile broadband in some parts of Alaska. But yeah, I agree with you. We need to expand that to Upland Canal for sure.
Okay, this one from Pamela said, I just couldn't hear you when I was on the phone, so I'm doing it by email. NRCS does well supporting traditional farming communities, but they do not support the hunting, fishing, or non-agricultural communities, such as Fort Yukon, Lower Kuskokwim, so forth. USDA will not hire a person for the Fort Yukon Resource Conservation Development Council. Among other traditional communities, such as American Samoa, they will not coordinate They don't have coordinators with experience in cross-cultural, traditional, or indigenous ways of making a living. Good point. And USDA deals best at looking for jobs. What we need for the state as a whole is ways to make a living, not jobs. Until this is examined, ways to make a living, we won't be able to thrive as a state, but only as a series of individuals. Well, I think you touched on that a little bit about the subsistence of scheduling for jobs, and that it's true. I mean, many people just don't need that much cash. They want to subsist and so forth.
No, and we need. I mean, I agree with Pamela. We need to have a better understanding of these communities and what their needs are and how to make them successful. And it's more than just creating jobs. It's finding ways to support what their goals are and what their needs are. And some of them are related to subsistence, and there are things that USDA can do to help support those. I know I've been involved a little bit with these tribal conservation districts that NRCS, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, helps support. And when I was out in Bethel with the Secretary of Agriculture, Secretary Vilsack, he signed a new agreement with Kwikluk to create a tribal conservation district out there. And part of what they do is they set their own goals. They set their own conservation-related goals for their community. And then USDA can come in and say, well, okay, how can we help you meet your goals?
And I think generally that's a good speaking, that's a fairly bottom-up process anyway, as I understand it. Okay, you're going to love this one, Danny, a content provider. This is Kathleen, who actually is in the photography and publishing business, and says, to assist Alaska small businesses, especially artists, craftspeople, photographers, publishers, the following would be helpful. Not just broadband, but affordable broadband. Mm. In Southeast, especially also regular, reliable, affordable ferry service would enable business folk to travel to communities to market their wares, make it more affordable for residents and tourists to travel to communities. This would support the retail jobs in Alaska as well as the artist, photographer, craftsperson.
Well, that's a good point. As what we were talking about earlier is what can government do if you assume that most of the job creation is really going to come through the private sector? Then what can government do? And one of the things government can do is to support these infrastructure needs, whether it's ferries, broadband, transportation, roads. That will help support, that sort of lays the foundation for what these private sector companies, whether it's in the arts or in any other business, that's what they need to do business in Alaska.
We've seen financial services too. I mean, McKinley Capital Management was, you know, just a floor full of computers in Midtown managing international investments.
Right.
Because they could.
Right.
Because they liked being in Alaska. Could have been anywhere.
Right. I mean, I think the other resource that Alaska has, besides our natural resources, besides our renewable energy resources that we have here, you know, some of the biggest and best in the world, is our people. And I think, you know, if we have entrepreneurial, which we do, I think, the Alaskan entrepreneurial spirit, I think that's a resource that Alaskans have that can help create jobs. We've got smart, creative people up here, and if we can have, that foundation that they need to create their own businesses, that'll help create jobs.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about creating jobs in rural communities and rural areas with Danny Constantine. And our telephone number, well, don't use it. Use the email, talk@APRN.org. I've got a stack of them already as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist awards. Learn more at rasmussen.org. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're having a little trouble with our phone connections. We can actually put your phone calls on the air, but the problem is you can't hear us when we talk back. So it's simply not working. But thanks to Mary, who called up with the message, people should buy local. You got to agree with that, right,
Dan? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And here, this one from Andrew, who's essentially kind of a shout out about something in the Bethel area. A rural entrepreneur by the name of Tim Myers in Bethel. Several Alaska news organizations have profiled this modestly sized commercial farm on the tundra in Bethel. I know he manages to grow all kinds of produce outdoors during the summer and then sells that by the box to local residents. Many jobs could be produced by using his example to start other small private farms in Western Alaska. And yeah, you were kind of talking along these lines, too.
And I was in Bethel, and I met Tim, and he is a great business model. He's also a great booster for agriculture in rural Alaska. I mean, Tim said when he first started, he had no idea if he could really succeed at growing vegetables. If he stripped away the tundra, what he would find and whether he could really grow things. But he found that he can. He's got some great innovative ideas of the way he grows. He uses fish waste and just turns it into kind of a big slush and mixes it with water and irrigates his crops with this fish, just his own kind of fish, fluid. And he grows incredible stuff. And he would love to teach others about how to do that. And he said, look, if I can do that here in Bethel, you know, we can grow vegetables anywhere in Alaska.
I've seen close gardening in Kotzebue, and this was even years ago. I understand there's quite a bit more of it now. Yeah. All you have to do is have the hoops, stick the rebar in the ground, and you're good to go.
Yeah, these hoop houses are actually a great idea for extending the growing season across Alaska. And there are programs USDA has now to help if there are farmers or gardeners who are interested in acquiring some of these hoop houses. They should contact me and I can direct them to some of the programs that will help actually support the purchase of those hoop houses.
Here's something that I also have been kind of astounded by moving here. A latecomer in 1982, but holy mackerel. Steve says, I recently saw rhubarb in the grocery store for $3.50 a pound, and I couldn't help but wonder if anybody has explored commercial production of rhubarb in Alaska. When I was in Fairbanks, it grew very well, and here in Juneau, I've seen stalks as big as baseball bats. Since we have ample, wet, swampy soil, it seems like this would be a perfect crop for Alaska.
No, that's a great idea. And you're not the first one that's thought of that, Steve. There's a lot of interest across here in the Matanuska Valley and in Fairbanks and the Delta area in building a rhubarb industry. Some folks in the valley have actually prototyped a rhubarb drink. And their thought was, okay, cranberry juice, A lot of people drink cranberry juice now. What is cranberry juice? I mean, that was just an entrepreneur who said, maybe if we took these kind of sour-tasting fruits and added a lot of sugar, we could create a drink that people would like. And
that's my rhubarb recipe.
Exactly. So there's a rhubarb. They've tried to make this rhubarb drink, and they think there's a real potential there.
Wow. Our guest is Danny Constantin, who has a new job at the U.S. Department of Agriculture Farm Services Agency. As you can tell, he's become an enthusiast. He's sold on Alaska agriculture, and he is here to help you. This one from Bob and Kathy. This one's interesting. Maybe it ties in with the Soil Conservation Service angle. Bob and Kathy and Homer say, hey, could homeowners be considered farmers for maintaining alder? I mean, after all, alder and pellets ought to be happening.
Well, I think that is an interesting idea. We were talking earlier about renewable energy, and clearly, one of the renewable energy resources that Alaska has is biomass. I mean, just think of all the wood that we have in Alaska and the potential that we have to convert our fuel oil use to woody biomass. When I was in Juneau, the Sea Alaska Corporation announced that they were going to convert their office building downtown Juneau from fuel oil to pellets. They're going to tear out the fuel oil boiler and put in a pellet boiler. They believe that there's a market, that there's a pellet plant that's going in Fairbanks right now. There's talk about pellet plants, potential pellet plants down in Southeast.
But it's probably not a crop yet.
No, but there's actually a program, one of the many programs that our Farm Service Agency has.
You name it, I got a program for you.
this is a new program to promote biomass energy conversion, and it does provide a payment to farmers or anyone who can produce, whether it's willow or alder or, you know, switchgrass.
Really?
or any kind of a biomass crop. And alder could certainly be a crop. If you're delivering that crop to a biomass facility, someplace that's turning it into energy or heat, then we'll make you a payment.
Wow. Well, thanks for playing along here. This has been really interesting riding through our technical difficulties, Danny Constantin. We'll have to have you back after this council meets this spring. And see how some of these ideas are developing, because there's certainly a lot of ideas. From Ann in Juneau, how about something like the Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank of Alaska, which is helping young people? There's just too many hurdles for them. And then we have Andrew saying, don't forget the Alaska Marketplace competition that is run by the Alaska Federation of Natives. All great. Jobs growth in rural Alaska was the subject today. Next week on Talk of Alaska, Representative Don Young will be in the studio and taking your phone calls. Dave Waldron on the controls, BD Trantina and Pat Yak on the phones. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ACS. With Android on ACS, an app is available to listen to NPR programming on your phone. Complete details at acsalaska.com. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.